sure as God made green apples, someday the Chicago Cubs are going to be in a World Series.
Here's the 0-1. This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series!
You are Locked On Cubs, your daily Chicago Cubs podcast.
But we didn't come here to drink beer! We came here to win this ballgame!
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I said to the Uber boy, I said, take me out with the crowd!
What's going on, Cubs fans? You are listening to Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Network, your team every day. I'm your host, Sean Sears, and on today's episode, I welcome on one of my co-hosts, Ryan Davis, to kind of take a look at this offseason. We've been going through individually, kind of looking at the offensive side. We did a podcast a couple weeks ago where we focused on specifically what the Cubs could be doing offensively, some players to keep an eye on, some players that the Cubs we think should go after, maybe not necessarily go after. We do the pitching in this episode, focusing heavily on starters. We talk about a couple of relievers, but this is mainly starting pitching. We know for sure the Cubs are going to probably need to sign at least two more arms, probably three or four potentially, including some depth signings there as well. So Ryan and I go through some of the names that we think you should pay attention to, and players that we do go over a couple pipe dream type guys, you know, people like Marcus Stroman, Masahiro Tanaka. Those type of arms would look wonderful in a Cubs uniform, but you know, realities of what's going on with the Cubs, who are already trying to cut their budget before anything happened with the pandemic, it seems unlikely. But we still target some guys, give you guys some names that you should be paying attention to, some realistic options, and we touch a little bit on John Lester, Tyler Chatwood, Jose Quintana to some extent. We don't directly say it, but I think we've said it enough on this podcast. We don't think Jose Quintana is coming back. We don't really want him to come back. No offense to Jose, but he's not really – I would rather give that rotation spot to someone else, to be honest. So we've kind of moved away from that, but we talked specifically about who the Cubs would be targeting this offseason and why. So it's a good podcast. Ryan brings up some great options. I was able to dive through some options as well too. So we'll go through that. We do have another – we did plan on doing another offseason recap episode, maybe focusing on like, you know, maybe the winter meetings once we have a better idea of what things are going or what direction this Cubs team is trying to go. We know they're going to try and compete in 2021. We know they're going to have a focus on the future. We just don't know how those two things are going to collide. And we talk a little bit about that too towards the end of this podcast, as well as touch on some of the labor disputes that should be coming now that the World Series is over and the ownership groups are asking players to come back to the table to basically renegotiate their 2021 salaries, even though at the moment right now, it doesn't seem like 2021 is going to be a shortened season by any means. So we dive in that towards the end of this podcast. But make sure if you have not that you are subscribed to Locked On Cubs and whatever podcast app you use, whether that's Google, Apple, Spotify, TuneIn app, wherever you listen to your podcast, subscribe, leave a 5-star review. And then make sure you're checking out some of our sister shows like Locked On Bulls, which is getting ready for the NBA draft, Locked On Bears, which is Lauren Cox going through this interesting Bears team. So check that out. Of course, Locked On White Sox with Herb Lawrence and Chris Tannehill. Shout out to Chris. It sounds like his family had a unfortunate loss in their family that wasn't necessarily COVID related, but did have COVID issues with it. So hopefully Tannehill's family is doing a little bit better now. Shout out to Chris. He's a great guy. But check out Locked On White Sox for any updates. It does sound like the White Sox might be announcing an announcer. Announcing a coach, a head coach here shortly. So that's interesting to check out. And then you, of course, want to head to Locked On Blackhawks if you're looking for anything hockey and Blackhawks related. But with that, here is our interview with Ryan Davis. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. And they're improved now and more delicious than ever with 6 new flavors to add to their already 18 amazing flavors, being caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry baraka, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, apple almond crisp. Some delicious flavors to go along with their coconut almond, raspberry, German chocolate, peanut butter, mint brownie is actually my favorite, double chocolate, orange, toffee, coconut, peanut butter brownie, all those flavors. Bars are covered in 100% chocolate, easy, soft to chew, some of the best tasting bars I've had. But on top of that, the Built Bar is healthy. It's great for health conscious people like myself who are trying to lose weight or, you know, work out and still try and keep eating something good for you, but that is low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. It's great for keto diets. It's a ton of just great options you can have while you're working out, while you're trying to eat a little bit healthier. Those are things Built Bar is built for. But I think one of my favorites is the cookies and cream. It's got 17 grams of protein, 130 calories, just 4 grams of sugar and 4 grams of net carb. I'm not very a super health conscious person myself. I like cookies and cream. I like stuff that tastes good, but I'm definitely trying to look for stuff to snack on throughout the day. Built Bar's been great because obviously, first off, they sent me some bars immediately when they first started partnering with Locked On, and they're delicious. But it's nice to have something that I can eat on and chew throughout the day that isn't like, you know, Goldfish, something bad for me, pop, sugar, all this stuff that I'm probably, you know, constantly distracted with, my refrigerator being directly behind me at my desk in my apartment. Having Built Bar here has helped me honestly lose a little bit of weight while I've been in quarantine, and it's honestly encouraged me to try and work out a little bit more. But right now, Built Bar has reset their promo code and is now offering a free cooler with purchase. So while supplies last, there's only about a week or so left in this, so obviously place your order soon, but go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your next order. Once again, that's promo code LOCKDOWN for $10 off at BuiltBar.com, the best tasting protein bar you will ever have. What's going on, Cubs fans? I am Sean Sears. I'm joined with Ryan Davis on today's episode. This is part two, the second part of our offseason breakdown. We touched specifically on the offense earlier on an earlier episode. So if you guys haven't listened to that one, make sure you check that one out before you dive into this one, I guess. And then maybe not. It doesn't really matter. If you want to hear about the offseason, you just got the other one. But I'm joined today with Ryan Davis. Ryan, how is your Tuesday going?
Oh, you know, couldn't be too much worse, I assume, or too much better. I mean, no, who knows? Because it could be worse. What a great start. Already stumbling over what I mean.
And we're rolling. Yeah. Well, to kind of talk into, well, I guess we'll dip our toes in this just a little bit, but obviously we touched on the offense. We kind of gave an idea of who we would love to see the Cubs approach and who realistically they might go after. The pitching, though, as we were talking about before we got started, is really murky for a lot of different reasons. Obviously, we don't really know what the market's going to look like. We don't really know how aggressive the Cubs plan on being. We do know they probably need at least two pitchers, preferably more likely for depth. But it's kind of slim pickings here. I guess before we jump into like the actual people we're talking about, what are you expecting from this Cubs pitching staff in 2021? I guess, like, what do the optics look like for us?
Well, I guess if you wanted to be optimistic about it, you could say that Yu Darvish and Kyle Hendricks as a 1-2 are, you know, maybe not the best 1-2 in the league, but pretty close up there. That's a championship caliber 1-2. I guess if you, depending on who your 3-4 are. So that's sure. A great place to start is that, you know, Darvish is a Cy Young candidate and Hendricks is a guy who just seems to be really good pretty much every year. And you know what you're going to get out of him and you feel like you can trust that he'll continue to be that good. On the other side of it with Darvish, who knows how long he's going to be performing at such a high level. So, you know, nothing's guaranteed for anybody ever, of course, but
sure.
Yeah, I think realistically, you're probably hoping you get one more great season out of him. So, that's the optimistic look at the Cubs rotation.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's pessimistic or if it's just realistic, but the other fact of it is you don't have a lot else really that's etched in stone. You have Alec Mills, who had a decent year for a guy starting a first full year in the big leagues. It was kind of up and down. He had the no-hitter, which was absolutely fantastic. But, you know, there were other games where he would be going really well for a while, and then he would get shelled in, like, the sixth inning or the fifth inning. You know, his peripheral numbers weren't great. He allowed almost 2 home runs per 9 innings. Not very good. He didn't strike out as many as he has at other times in his career. 4.48 ERA, a 5.44 FIP. Really with him, I mean, that's a cheap option that's under team control at a time when everybody in baseball is crying poor. So that's a guy that I would expect to be, if not penciled in as your number 5, at least given the ability to battle with other guys that you bring in for that fifth spot. And then you also have Albert Alzolay, who another guy that I would hope would be given every opportunity to battle for one of those rotation spots, and maybe
better.
Yeah, I would assume maybe he could bump out Alec Mills depending on who else you bring in. I don't think that the idea of both Mills and Alzolay starting in your rotation at the beginning of next year, that's probably not an ideal scenario. You want to bring in at least two other guys who are good enough to take rotation spots. So we've both come up with lists of those guys that could be out there as free agents. And another thing that I said before we started that should be mentioned, the Cubs don't have a lot of money to play with. Unfortunately, they've made that very clear. And a lot of other teams don't have a lot of money to play with. But the market for starting pitchers is almost entirely guys who you wouldn't have expected to get big deals in the long run anyway. There's a lot of bounce back candidates and guys that you think maybe might get a 1 or 2 year deal for one reason or another. And we'll get into that. But I think that may play into the Cubs' hands that there are a lot of bounce back candidates out there to choose from.
Yeah, definitely. There are plenty of names that you would know and would be super excited about maybe 5 years ago. but obviously that's, you know, what's going to happen here. But exactly, like the guys that we're going to talk about here are probably the guys the Cubs would have targeted regardless of there being COVID issues and the financial realities of a lot of teams are dealing with, however you want to put realities, I guess. But yeah, I mean, there's just not going to be a lot of money. I know we mentioned it on the first part of our off-season talk podcast. So the Cubs, like Bleacher Nation, at least put together a projection of about like $180 million roughly, including arbitration, but not including like guys that are leaving this team, John Lester, so-and-so. So, I mean, I guess I would think the luxury tax this year, I think, goes up maybe slightly. So, like, I think maybe like 209 to 211. It's not a lot. When you start looking at like what a budget would look like next year for the team, like $180 million to $211 million isn't really a lot of wiggle room, especially when you do have to allocate some of that money to like a need for this season right now. Like you do have to pay pitchers. You do need some depth on your bench. You probably need another bullpen guy. Like you do need to spend money, even if it's not big money. And then you think about off-season moves or mid-season moves or anything you have to do, you know, during the season, you need to give yourself wiggle room. So like the Cubs don't have a lot of money to work with. Top talent isn't coming here. So I, you know, that sucks, but bounce back candidates are something the Cubs love to do. Maybe they find one that pitches in 2021 instead of trading them in 2022, like they've been doing these last couple of years. But
And the unfortunate part of it is I think even $180 million might be pushing where the Cubs actually end up with their payroll. I have a gut instinct that they've been told to cut as much as they can. It wouldn't surprise me to see trading a player that's going to make a decent amount of money that has some value for pennies on the dollar just to drop the money, which is sad, but that's where we are with the Cubs at this point, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, they completely gutted their player and scouting development department. We got the number this last week from The Athletic. It sounds like over 100 employees from the Cubs have been cut, and it doesn't seem like those jobs are going to be replaced at some point. So that's pretty much just 100 guys in the Cubs system, whether they were scouts, player development specific, some types of coaches, all without jobs.
Some guys who were like Cubs lifers. I can't remember the name, but one guy who'd worked there about 40 years. Yeah, we're going down a dark road, so we should probably veer back to starting.
Yeah, I was going to say. Let's talk about something.
It's fair to, you know, at least address the elephant in the room of, you know, whether you want to say COVID is the only reason. It's definitely not. It's a convenient reason for teams like the Cubs to cry about money and start cutting back on salaries. I'm sure that, you know, if it wouldn't be just bad optics at any other given time, I'm sure the Ricketts family would love to cut loose 100 employees and save that money. So,
1,000%. Yeah.
So it exists. It's something we have to at least address before we get into, you know, why we think some of these guys might be fits for the Cubs.
Definitely. So I think my first one, I think Trevor Bauer, I think the Cubs should just give him a max deal. What do you think? Is that even a thing in baseball?
No. Is the production quality good enough on our podcast that we could edit in a toilet flush noise?
Yeah. We could get there. Let's dive into these names. I know we've been kind of teasing them up here a little bit, but what's the first name on your list, Ryan, for Cubs targets, I guess?
So looking at free agents, I think the probably biggest one that I like that I think is a fit for the Cubs is Kevin Gausman. He finally pitched up to his original prospect status in 2020. But again, it's only 59 and two-thirds innings. You could also add in that it was a contract year for him. He's going to be 30 next year. There's a reasonable chance that he'll be out of the Cubs price range because he'll be looking for a longer term deal. So it may not be a fit, but I know it's a guy that the Cubs have really liked a lot. They've really coveted him over the last several years. There's always, you know, seems like pretty much every trade deadline, there's a rumor that the Cubs are sniffing around Kevin Gausman, and he did pitch really well this
He's
year.
He's at the top of my list too, so yeah.
I'd love, that's the guy that I think if you're really truly looking at winning a championship in 2021, there's your number three starter. Of the options that are available to you, I think that one makes the most sense. Do you have more to add on Gausman since he was your number one?
No, just that the Cubs have always for some reason shown interest in Kevin Gausman, so it would make sense that they would this offseason. The other name I had on here that's probably a little too ridiculous, but I thought, you know, hey, maybe if it happens, was Masahiro Tanaka. I know the Cubs showed interest when he initially posted. It's probably too rich for their blood. I wouldn't be surprised if he stays in New York. It doesn't seem like he has any issues there. And they're probably one of the few clubs that could spend money. Who knows? You never know with Cashman, but Tanaka is a guy that I think if the Cubs could get, I think he is, I think he's going to be 33, I think.
I think he's about to turn 32. So he'll be 32 next year. Yeah.
I'm pulling up. I had his, yeah, he's turning 32 next year. Yeah. So, I mean, like, yeah, the wrong side of 30, but for a pitcher who's been really good, he does have, a couple rough seasons in New York back to back, but in 2018 and 2020, he pitched well. Obviously, 2020, we could probably throw those numbers out the window for the most part. But he pitched closer to what he had done prior to like the last couple seasons where his ERA kind of climbed up a little bit. But doesn't strike out a lot of guys, but when he's not walking guys and locating the zone, he's very efficient and with a good, hopefully continuously improving or at least consistent defense behind the Cubs, because we saw 2019 they dip. Like, Tanaka could make sense there.
Yeah. Yeah. The walks are really low, which you love to see. I love that the changing definition of striking out a lot of guys that jumped out to me when you said it. I think he struck out 8.3 per nine this year, which is pretty good. 7.4 the year before. But yeah,
I meant like, striking out comparatively to last year. Obviously, the numbers jumped. But yeah, he's not a dude that mows guys down, but can get strikeouts. He's like, I compare him a little bit to Jake Arrieta, because like I remember we would watch games and I would think like, man, this guy is just dealing. And then you like look and Jake Arrieta striking guys out, but it's like closer to like 8 or 9 as opposed to 11 or 12 that you would expect.
Right. But with Jake Arrieta's stuff, you would probably look back and think that he struck out like 13 batters per nine, but he didn't. He lived on a lot of, he would get strikeouts with his great stuff, but he also got a lot of soft contact and he had just an elite defense behind him at that time in his career as well. So
yeah,
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, I like Tanaka. I didn't even bother putting him on my list though for all the reasons you added. It was because I just assume he's going to end up back with the Yankees. If he does go somewhere else, I guess there's a chance, but it seems like another guy that, you know, he's fairly well established. He's probably going to look for a longer term contract at this point. You know, turning 32 years old, it just doesn't seem like a fit for the Cubs, even though they did like him quite a bit. They were obviously very disappointed that they didn't get him when he posted.
Yeah, definitely. And long shot, absolutely. But a guy that I think just because of the history could be an option. That being said, this looks like a done deal with New York, to be honest. I just like Tanaka. Yeah. So, but who's the next?
He would return.
Sorry, yeah, I didn't cut you off. Go ahead.
No, it's fine. my next guy, another Another pitcher that I think probably doesn't end up with the Cubs, but I like him, is Marcus Stroman. He didn't pitch at all in 2020. He sat out the season. He's going to be 30 next year, not too old. In 2019, he had a 3.22 ERA in 32 starts. Over the last 3 years that he's actually pitched, 3.65 ERA in 487 innings. So he's been, I don't want to call him consistent because he had a bad year in there, but he's a guy with good stuff that I think, based on what you've seen, is a guy that you would think would be really good in 2021, especially after taking the year off to and resting his arm, that that guy could come out and have a really great season. The other aspect of it is he's going to want a longer term contract, which I'm sure the Cubs are going to shy away from. And the issue with him is he's only 5'7 or 5'8. I knew he was shorter. I assumed that he was like 5'10 because I knew he was under 6 feet, but he's considerably shorter than that. So those guys tend to flame out a little bit. If you think about even Tim Lincecum wasn't even that short. And, you know, at what point did he just completely flame out in the big leagues? I'd have to look it up. I know he had a reasonably long career and he was 5'11". So, you know,
I would Stroman's, say like it was.
Yeah, Stroman's at least a couple inches shorter. Let's see, I've got it right here. Lincecum's last pretty decent year,
I'd say it's like 2013, I think 2012 he like dipped a bit in his ERA, but 2013 he posted sub 4 ERA, and then from there it's kind of just garbage.
pretty close 2013 it was a 4.37 ERA, but he threw almost 200 innings, so a decent year, not like Cy Young worthy. And then, yeah, he basically fell apart after that. So like, it's not the best comparison, but in general, you don't see a lot of, you know, elite starting pitchers under 6 feet tall who have long careers. And Stroman at like 5'8", or even if he's 5'9", you know, that's just not a guy that you want to give a long-term contract to. So if it's one of those things where, you know, he sat out the year, other teams are trying to hold back on money, he's, you know, maybe not as projectable long term, if he doesn't get the offers for the long term deal that he's looking for, maybe he takes a 1 year prove it deal with the Cubs or anywhere else, and the Cubs maybe want to go that route. But yeah, if it's more than 2 years, I don't think it's a fit. So that I have him on my list because I like him a lot and I would go 2 years on him, but probably not much more.
Yeah, that's the reasons there why I stayed away from, just like you were saying with Tanaka, same reasons for Stroman. I like Stroman a lot, though. I've always thought he was a good pitcher, and he's a guy that doesn't need to strike out batters to be effective as a pitcher. He can do it from time to time, but he's a guy that averages like, you know, like 7, maybe 8 strikeouts per 9 inning a season. He's probably hovering right around there usually. He's not mowing dudes down, but he finds ways to be effective. He doesn't walk a ton of guys and give up a lot of hard contact, like you were saying. The FIP has been pretty solid, so he kind of fits the role of what you would look for, I guess, like the typical Cub pitcher these last couple of years in terms of that. But he's obviously a former All-Star, a Cy Young level pitcher. I think he was a Cy Young candidate maybe 1 year in Toronto. But talented guy. That being said, yeah, I think that if the Cubs were to sign some type of long-term deal, it's going to be backloaded, and I just don't know how many players are going to be up for that, or they're going to want options, and the Cubs just historically, at least Epstein, has refused to give the players those options. So
yeah,
I don't see a long-term deal working out, but man, it would be so cool to get Stroman. He's such a fun guy.
Yeah, I like him a lot. And the other aspect of it is, again, we're talking about if you're going to win a World Series in 2021, which has to be the goal. If you've got Yu Darvish number one, Kyle Hendricks number two, Stroman is an excellent number three. That's a championship caliber number three. Absolutely.
100%. Yeah, I agree.
Guy for you.
Yeah, I was going to say my next guy is Taiwan Walker.
Actually. Yeah, that was my next one as well.
That's funny. I like Walker. He was a guy, obviously, the Cubs showed interest in a little bit. I think, was it last offseason or two off seasons ago? He came and did a workout or something like that for them. And then
I think it was spring training this last year, right?
I think so.
And then he worked out for the Cubs and
then signed with Seattle.
He worked out for the Cubs, and then I think that same day he worked out for the Mariners, right? And most people just kind of overlooked the Cubs because it was assumed that he would just return to Seattle, and he did. He had a good year.
He did, and he pitched well for he did okay in Seattle. I think it was like 5 starts and 6 starts because he split obviously with Toronto, mm-hmm. but he pitched really well in Toronto. He was a big reason why they were finding ways to win. Obviously their offense was really good too, but was a big part of that rotation, him, Robbie Ray, a lot of those guys. I'm sure that's a name that'll pop up later on one of our lists. But I like Walker. Obviously, bounce back issues, a former top prospect, a guy that when he was pitching consistently for Seattle wasn't great, I would necessarily say. Like the most innings he's thrown is 169. That was in 2015, and his ERA was 5.56. Not necessarily great, a decent amount of walks. You know, you wonder what you'll get out of him, but in terms of like ceiling wise, there's a few guys in this, I guess, free agency pool that you would identify as maybe a buy low, high risk, high reward type guy, maybe that have the ceiling that he does. So I would be very interested in taking a flyer out on him.
Yeah, I'd be interested if the price were right. Obviously, I put him on my list, but the other aspect of it is how heavily do you weight this season and performance. He had a 2.70 ERA in 11 starts, which is great in the 11 starts, but that's only 53 and a third innings. At the same time, on the other aspect of it, he was healthy, which is the main concern with him. He made it through beginning to end and pitched well and healthy, which is something you really can't say going back to, what, 2017, really? I think he pitched...
That was probably his best season, but yeah.
Yeah, and he had 3 starts in 2018, 1 start, 1 inning in 2019, and then he pitched well this last year. He also had a 4.56 FIP in 2020. So again, small sample size. Who knows what the market for him is going to be? That another guy that's just, I don't even know how to begin to set the market on that. You know, like a guy who's historically, injury-filled seasons is what he has a career full of, and he was healthy this year. So how do you set that market in a small, in a short truncated season? Doesn't make any sense to me. So I have him on my list because I like him as a number 4, number 5 guy. But again, if somebody's offering him more than 1 year, I wouldn't go near that.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it says a lot that Arizona basically stuck with him for 3 years and then decided to cut bait after that, after seeing like maybe 30 plus starts from him over 3 seasons. That's kind of concerning, especially because Arizona doesn't have a ton of pitching. So at least not at this moment. They do have some good arms, but that's concerning, I guess. But who's another guy on your list, Ryan?
This is another guy that I think has been tied to the Cubs frequently the last couple years, or at least it was one time. And that's Mike Minor. He's a left-hander. I think the Cubs were interested in signing him in the offseason before the 2018 season, if that sounds right.
That sounds it was right around there. I remember them signing Brandon Morrow and all that. That was the year they signed Steve Cishek and all that. I think it was the year before they had interest. You're right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He was injured and out of the big leagues. He was a starter early on with the Braves, injured out of the big leagues for a couple years, bounced back with the Kansas City Royals in the bullpen in 2017. That's right. So 65 appearances out of the bullpen, 2.55 ERA, struck out a bunch of guys, really was elite as a reliever. And then he went into free agency that year and people were debating whether he would be a reliever or a starter. And the Cubs had interest, and I can't recall if they had interest in him as a starter or a reliever, but at any rate, I remember there being Cubs rumors, and he ended up signing with the Texas Rangers. And he had just an outstanding two-year run, especially 2019. He was an all-star. He finished in the top 10 in Cy Young voting. Just a lot of strikeouts. I think, he struck out 200 batters in 2019, and then this year at age 32 just completely fell apart. 11 starts, 56 and two-thirds innings, 5.56 ERA, split between the Rangers and the Oakland A's. he was a little better with the A's, but still not great. Still strikes out a bunch of guys. The walks aren't insane. He didn't give up a ton of hits or anything like that, but he gave up some home runs. It's weird to see a guy with a 5.56 ERA who had a complete game shutout in an 11 games. So, I think there was just a couple games where he got blown up real bad. But that's a guy that I think is another, you know, he's going to be 33 years old. So he's probably not getting more than a 1 or 2 year deal at not much money. So there's a guy that I think would be, you know, hopefully battling for that fourth spot in your rotation, maybe. Not hanging high hopes on him to be your number three starter by any means.
Yeah, I like Minor. I thought I was disappointed to see him have such a rough season with Oakland because I thought that was such a fun fit for him and that team. But I still think he's an interesting guy. I think he's a guy that you, even if he isn't quite working it out as a starter, you could probably find some use with him as a reliever maybe if you need to simplify his game a little bit in that regard. But yeah, you wonder about the money. You wonder about like him being a reliable fourth or fifth option. You don't want to replace – he's not Tyler Chatwood necessarily, but you don't want to replace a Tyler Chatwood problem with a Mike Minor problem, I guess. Yeah. so you worry about those things. But yeah, in terms of, like, I mean, he's definitely one of the higher arms on available right now. Like he would be, if the Cubs signed him, I'd be excited. I'd definitely be excited.
Yeah, I'd be excited about it. And for one of the reasons you mentioned was if he's battling for a rotation spot and he just gets outperformed by, let's say, Adbert Alzolay and Alec Mills, or, you know, whoever else you bring in on a short deal, that's a guy you could put in your bullpen and he'd be your lefty in the pen. A guy who, you know, could strike out a ton of batters and pitch really well for you, hopefully. So, yeah, that's a guy that makes a lot of sense for that aspect of it. There are some guys on this list who are just, for better or worse, they're a starter. And if you bring them in and they don't grab that starting rotation spot, what do you do with him? A guy like John Lester, for example, you know, if you're bringing him back, you're giving him a rotation spot. He's not going to the bullpen, right? So this is a guy who I think has that ability that if you did bring him in and put him in that spot to compete for a rotation job, you'd be okay sending him to the bullpen too.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do have one name on here. He's a reliever. It's not very likely, but I think just given his age and what he's been able to do in such a short amount of time of being good, Kirby Yates is a guy I'm interested in. I don't know if he's going to be affordable. He's going to be 33 to start next year. So there are obviously, like, he's not going to get some big long-term deal, I wouldn't think. So I would assume he's probably a 1 or 2 year deal guy anyways. Maybe the Cubs take a flyer on him. Tell me why I'm stupid.
Well, mostly because we're talking about starters. No, I'm just kidding. I'm with you on him. If he's healthy, then I think he's a brilliant signing for somebody. The big problem I think is going to be that there's, again, in this market, there's going to be a lot of teams that are in on him. Just an elite reliever when he's healthy. 2019 numbers, 60 games, 41 saves in 44 chances, 1.19 ERA. He struck out 15 batters per nine with less than 2 walks per nine. He only gave up 2 home runs in 60 2/3 innings. So yeah, just an elite reliever. This year he pitched 4 1/3 innings, didn't do too well. Still struck out a ton of guys, but gave up home runs. He gave up walks. Again, it's only 4 1/3 innings. So, like you said, he's 33 years old now. So next year he'll be 34. But I don't feel like there's a ton of miles on his arm.
Right.
Because, you know, looking here, he's thrown 282 innings in the big leagues. So not a ton of miles on his arm. Didn't even make it to the big leagues until he was 27. So, that's a guy that if he's there for you, I would absolutely sign to a contract. But again, I think there's probably 30 teams that are looking at Kirby Yates thinking, if he falls to our price range, let's go get him.
Exactly. And that's where, you know, that probably doesn't happen, but he's a pipe dream I've had. Do you have any other names on your list, Ryan? Anyone else you wanted to point out?
Yeah, I've got like a ton more that I not all need to be like, you know, hashed out real heavy. You mentioned Robbie Ray earlier. There's another just a bounce back guy looking for a 1-year deal, probably. He was a Cy Young candidate in 2017. He has gotten just a little bit worse every year since. And this year he had a 6.62 ERA in 11 starts. He walked up a ton of guys. He gave up a ton of homers. He still strikes out a lot of batters. So that's another guy that maybe you're looking at a 1-year deal to kind of prove it. And then we can just go into the other list of names that'll be on the market if you want to.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Other guys that I think from my point of view, I'm interested in on strictly a 1-year low dollar deal, trying to fill out the rotation mostly as, you know, prove it guys or what have you. John Lester, who I think is probably of all the names we said, probably the most likely.
Yeah, he's probably the most likely. The one we talked about the least, but yeah, most likely coming back.
Tyler Chatwood, I still have on that list. Another guy that you could have compete for a rotation job. And if he doesn't get it, you put him in the bullpen. But at the same time, with Chatwood, it's kind of like we've seen this already. And like, how good would you feel about going into next year, like, okay, we have a rotation. It's Darvish, Hendricks, Lester, Chatwood, and Mills. That would be so depressing.
Yay! Championships now.
Yeah. But outside of those guys, Jake Arrieta, you know, again, 1-year deal, a flyer. I think that's a way to excite Cub fans just a little bit, even if the production isn't going to be justified. You know, bringing him back, I think it reminds me to a lesser extreme when Jordan retired from the Bulls the second time, and like shortly after they brought back like BJ Armstrong and Will Perdue.
Yeah.
for like a 1-year, like, hey, remember these guys?
Yeah, let's remember the times when we were good because we just lost our best player. Yeah, that would be a very pro move by the Cubs if they did trade someone like Chris Bryant to bring back Jake Arrieta.
Right. Just, you know, something to give fans excited about. Everybody loves Jake Arrieta. Your memories aren't of him having the fall off the cliff that he had with the Phillies. The memories of him are, you know, the Cy Young season, then the World Series, winning those, you know, two very important games in the World Series, and then that last start walking off the mound in the NLCS in 2017. Like, those are your memories of him. So it would at least jazz up the fan base a bit to bring him back. Another guy to a much lesser extent, Jeff Samardzija, is out there. A lot of Cubs fans love him for some reason. I think it's the Notre Dame aspect.
Yeah.
which I've never understood, but I know people like Notre Dame, whatever. And then other guys, Rich Hill, another former Cub, that I think would maybe excite the fan base a little bit. A guy who's still pitching really well. He's going to be 41 next year, but I get like we talked about with Kirby Yates and a few of the other guys on the list, less miles on that arm, because he had so many years where he was just trying to make it back to the big leagues. And then there's Mike Leake and Anthony DeSclafani, a couple right-handers who, again, probably 1-year deals, just filling out the rotation kind of guys. But in, you know, with DeSclafani, there's at least, you know, some a little bit of projectability, like a guy who with, you know, he's not your number three in a rotation, but, you know, you could probably get away with him as a number four if he's pitching, you know, like he has when he's healthy. So that's my rundown of just a handful of guys I pulled out of the list, saying, okay, yeah, I could see you know, one or two of these ended up with the Cubs. Any others that you have that I might have missed?
The only one I wanted to throw out there just because we were mentioning former Cubs arms was Chris Archer. He's got a player option, I think, for the Pirates that they'll probably decline. I think it's like 10 or 11 million. So he'll probably be a free agent, I would assume. Maybe the Pirates want to keep him or not. But he's a name. I mean, he's always been a guy the Cubs have been that showed interest in a bunch when he was with Tampa Bay. Obviously, they traded him for Matt Garza. You know, I wouldn't be thrilled about it, but I mean, like, yeah, it's a name.
Yeah, weirdly enough, the trade that I think got a ton of crap at the time that it happened, that ended up be that ended up could have been a really great trade for the Cubs was the Mark DeRosa trade. They really dealt him at like the height of his value, which is something the Cubs typically don't do. And they got back Chris Archer. And then, you know, obviously down the road, they traded him for Matt Garza, kind of ruining that aspect of that deal. But still, you know, I remember being upset about the DeRosa trade when it happened. And I remember everyone I knew was pretty upset about it as well. But in retrospect, it was they traded him at the height of his value. They got a really great pitching prospect back, and that guy, you know, developed and became a big league pitcher. I guess the only thing you could really say is if the Cubs kept Archer under the old regime, would he have actually developed and made it to the big leagues? That's a good question, but
it's a fair one too. But yeah,
So anyway, back on topic, the Cubs need to sign, I don't know, probably at least three starting pitchers.
That's what I would think at least. I mean, like two guys for your rotation for sure, and then maybe a depth signing. But yeah, what were you saying though? Sorry.
I was saying a varying value. I mean, I could I could see them you know, throwing some of the money aspect out of it. I'd really love to see them go get Kevin Gausman, and then, you know, maybe a Robbie Ray and John Lester, or, you know, maybe John Lester and Jake Arrieta. That would be really cool. Yeah, Gausman fits in as your number three. And then for four and five, you have, you know, Lester, Arrieta, Mills, and Aber Alzolay. You know, two of those four. That would make a lot of sense as well. So that's kind of like the realistic, optimistic kind of offseason, maybe.
That's probably best case scenario, honestly, man.
Right. Yeah, that's probably the better way of putting it. That's your best case scenario. Of course, everyone would love for the Cubs to go out and just sign all the best pitchers and all the best hitters. And yeah, it's just not realistic, especially this year. So that would be my ideal, is go out and get Kevin Gausman and go out and, you know, just kind of fill up on guys that you think maybe you could squeeze another good year out of. So yeah, that's where I am with it.
Yeah. That's about where I have come to terms with it too. I hope for more exciting things to be done on offense, but I think the most exciting things coming from this team are probably who's going to leave more so than who's arriving, which is sad. Yeah. But you know,
and again, part of this is predicated on the notion that you're trying to compete for a World Series championship in 2021, and for the first time since 2014, I don't think it's a slam dunk that they are trying to compete for a championship next year.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly what the prognosis of this season is, basically. And I think it's fair to assume too, the Cubs don't know what they're doing yet either. I don't think a lot of teams know what they're really doing. But I don't think the Cubs have a clear cut plan. I think they have an idea of what they're going to try and do, but ultimately it's going to depend more so on what happens outside of them than what they're doing currently. Yeah. So, it'll be strange, but whatever.
Yeah, and the fact that there's still rumors that Theo Epstein is considering walking away from his final year with the Cubs, however realistic that is or not, I think that the fact that those rumors even exist tells you a lot about their ability to win a championship in 2021 and how Theo Epstein feels about it.
Yeah, I think that's probably, yeah, that is a really great way to see what the heck the Cubs are doing. If your guy who's running the show is thinking about dipping a year early, it's never really a great sign that things have gone according to plan, which they obviously haven't. We know all that. But I still think there's some optimism for this 2021 season. I think this team could still be good. There's plenty of guys who, you know, we've been saying it forever, but realistically could bounce back in a big way. I mean, they really just needed a bat to get going, and the pitching was decent enough for them to win games, at least for game one and two that we saw. Who knows what would have happened in game three? We didn't get one of those this year.
Right.
But
So before we kind of finish up, just in the same kind of vein of what we're talking about, the Cubs in their 60 games went 34-26. That's obviously after the 13-3 hot start, which really heavily influenced their final record. But let's pretend for a minute that they went 13-3 to start the season, and after 60 games, they were 34-26. What if they still had another 102 games? where does that record end up? Are they, I mean, they won the division technically, but I feel confident saying that they don't if this is a 162 game season.
So we just did an NL crossover podcast for the Locked On Network guys. We got on the Locked On Cardinals and Reds host, and I said the same thing. Like, you extend this maybe 2 weeks and the Cubs are probably in third place if they continue playing the way they were. I think we probably see repeat of last year. They probably end up somewhere pretty close to 500, maybe a game or two over, a game or two under. But I don't think anything was changing. And I think if this was a full season, there would have been way more conversation about what the Cubs do at the deadline. I don't think, maybe not at 34 and 22, but, or 36 and 24?
34 and 26.
34 and 22. Yeah, thank you. Jeez, math. 34 and 26, like, you know, you're not maybe not having those conversations yet, but if things kept progressing the way they were and you were winning maybe two games out of five every week, if even, like, the yeah, it wasn't going to go well. I'm just thinking about it in my head right now, looking at that calendar. They would have probably ended up someplace in third place, and I don't think they would have stuck around. So does that impact your decisions here, though, I guess is the question.
Yeah, I don't know. They were 31 and 20 before and up 5.5 games in the division. And then they went, 3-6 in the final nine and finished three games up. So, I mean, they had a comfortable enough lead. But, you know, who's to say they wouldn't have eventually kind of figured something out and rebounded? A lot of these guys had really awful, very short seasons. And who knows, maybe Chris Bryant and Javier Baez figure it out over the long haul. We just don't know. So that's another aspect of it, is that you have to expect internal improvement for next season. So how you evaluate this team is so difficult. It's all based on small sample sizes. So, you know, how much do you trust Jason Hayward and Ian Happ in the good seasons they had? You know, are you bringing back Jeremy Jeffress based on his strong season? I would say probably not. Based
hey,
on
Ryan,
what the...
that's an NL Reliever of the Year candidate you're talking about. Did you know that?
Oh, yes, I did know that, yeah. Jefferson is 1.54 ERA, but then is 4.09 FIP and is less than 7 strikeouts per 9 out of the bullpen.
Filthy.
Yeah, he gave up 10 hits all year. We'll say it that way. But yeah, like there's a lot of small sample issues that you can't scout the stat line on this team, unfortunately. Because you look at Jeffress and how misleading his ERA was, how misleading Dan Winkler's ERA was, and then at the same time, how misleading Craig Kimbrell and Dwayne Underwood Jr. were with their numbers, being ERAs over 5 when they were, you know, you felt much better about them at the end of the year than you did about, let's say, Jeffress or Winkler. So there's just so many issues here. I don't know how you even evaluate this team going into the off season, how you evaluate it properly and where they stand as a contender next year. But my gut says that if this were a 162 game season, that the Cubs finish around 500, like you said, like 81, 82 wins, something like that, maybe. I don't think this team is that particularly good.
Yeah, it sucks because, you know, all we talked about forever was how high the ceiling was, the talent level for these guys, how great they could be, and it just wasn't actualized, which sucks, especially because we, like you said, small sample sizes. We saw flashes of greatness from, like, all of these players at different points. Excuse me. We saw the potential where it's like, oh, okay, so this is why, you know, Kyle Schwarber was such a high draft pick, or this is why Ian Happ was on this team, or, you know, a couple of years ago, or this is why X, Y, and Z, those type of things. But it just has never come together as a unit. And I think you have to stop saying, well, you know, what if they did, and start saying it's probably not. It's probably not going to happen. So you hope for change, but, you know, at the same time, too, when you're talking about financial situations, what the Cubs can do, what they can't do. Do you really want to just eat money for something? Like, someone brought up the idea of a trade that would be like Kyle Schwarber for, the pitcher for Colorado. What's his first name? Gray. Something Gray.
Oh, John Gray.
John Gray. Jeez. Yeah, I knew it was something boring. John Gray for like Kyle Schwarber. I think that's probably like best case scenario for a deal. And even that, I don't know if the Rockies just do a straight up Schwarber for for Gray trade. I think they're both 1 year left on their deal, but like that's probably the best case scenario for a trade if you're talking about moving a guy like Schwarber, right?
Yeah. Let's see. I pulled him up right now. Yeah, John Gray, another guy didn't have the best year, and they do both have just 1 year left. It looks like Gray made, before the proration and all that, his arbitration salary was $5.6 million in 2020, whereas Schwarber's was $7 million. So you might save a couple bucks doing that deal. Schwarber obviously was bad in 2020, and so was John Gray in 39 innings. He had a 6.69 ERA. Not very nice. But again, a guy that's pitched at Coors Field, so he's got that going for him. You get him away from Coors Field and see if he could be better. You know, high profile arm. That's probably a trade that I wouldn't hate necessarily. I'm pulling up his career numbers to see how bad he is at home versus the road. His home and away splits are not that dissimilar, to be totally honest. He's a little worse at home, so maybe you don't get that much of a bounce from him getting away from Coors. I know everyone expected the same out of Chatwood.
Chatwood, I was going to say, is this 2018?
but yeah, I mean, as far as Schwarber's value, I feel like that's probably appropriate, right?
Right. Like, I don't know if that's a slam dunk deal, and I don't know if that's either team would want that, but like, that's the type of constructed deal you would probably be looking for a Kyle Schwarber trade. Like, that's probably what's out there, and it's probably worse than that, to be honest. So like, you're really not getting much value back. So it really does make it tough. I think the Cubs are realistically going to see the most value out of probably a buy low trade like that, and DFA candidates. That's really what you're hoping for, because like, change just isn't gonna, like, momentous change that everyone thinks is happening or is praying that'll happen probably won't. Like, it'll probably be small tweaks here, and in 2021, assuming there's no long-term extensions, the Cubs will probably have to figure it out from there.
Right. But. And the other aspect of it is, I don't know the Rockies well enough to know what their financial situation is. I assume the financials are bad, just like every other team is saying. So who knows if, you know, with 1 year left after John Gray performed, you know, pretty bad in 2020, you know, are they even looking at possibly DFAing him or trading him for basically a bag of baseballs? Just don't know what the Rockies' plans are there.
So that's true. We're talking about all these DFA candidates, and like, the Cubs could very well DFA Schwarber. I don't think that'll happen, but
I don't think it will either. But from the other aspect of it, you know, maybe John Gray is a guy that you could pull away from the Rockies without giving up Kyle Schwarber, just by, you know, maybe sending a prospect or two, a decent level prospect. You might be able to get, and when I say decent level, I mean a guy who's not like a guy that you expect anything out of, because he is coming off a bad year and he only has 1 year left. And if they're looking at moving John Gray, it's probably because they're looking to not pay him the $8 million he'll probably be due.
Right, in arbitration.
2021, yeah. So that, I don't think, from that aspect of it, I think it's likely that the Schwarber deal doesn't make any sense unless the Cubs are picking up some of that money.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad they don't pay us to do this for a job, because I already hate it. Is there anything you wanted to throw out here before we close the book on, at least for the moment right now, our plan for the offseason for pitching, which is apparently sign guys if you have money, but if you don't, I guess sign the other ones.
Yeah, that's the major thing, is that we don't have all the information yet. And free agency is supposed to start in a couple days. Major League Baseball's already said that they want the players to come to the table and you know, do another negotiation for how much money they're going to get in 2021, which is not a shortened season. So basically the owners are just out of their depth with this. You know, they want to have a contract that locks the players in to how much they're going to make when the owners are making money hand over fist, when everything's healthy. And when things aren't so healthy and they're not making as much money, they want the players to give up concessions. And that's just not how it works. You know, you either do revenue split every year, or you agree to an amount and you pay it whether things are good or bad. I mean, that's just like, not to get too far into the weeds on it, but it's mind-bogglingly bad capitalism to sit there and say, well, we're going to sign a contract so that you get X amount regardless of how much money we make. And as soon as the amount of money we make goes down, we want you to give up some of what you're making. Like, it's just completely right. backwards. And it just reeks of desperation. And it tells me that the owners collectively, if that's what they want, they just don't understand how this works.
Yeah, or they just don't care.
That might be as well. Yeah, that they want to have their cake and eat it too.
Right.
It just seems like when you were making all those billions of dollars the last two decades as baseball has just made money like crazy, you know, were you not like sitting on a mountain of cash? I know that the problem is when you evaluate like the amount of money that they're going to lose, quote unquote, you're not looking at, you know, these other businesses that, you know, the Cubs, they take some of the money they make and they, you know, buy up buildings or in Wrigleyville and they open up these other little ancillary businesses. That's not including revenue from those businesses, which may also be down, but it's misleading numbers that we can't really quantify. Right. And they want it, the fact that they want to make the players for what we assume is a 162 game season come to the table and take more concessions ahead of next year because they're projecting losses is insulting to both the players and the process of bargaining a contract. So, we're not even at the point where I'm like 100% certain we're going to have a 2021 season.
Yeah. I mean, the CBA needs to be hammered out, obviously, and that'll come shortly after this. But like, yeah, it's just backwards. Like, none of it makes sense. Like, there's no way the owners trade guys when they like balk at the idea of having to do whatever they're doing for their money. The fact that the owners are like trying to backpedal and take money away after making a stupid amount of money these last couple of years, especially like just in the last 4 years alone, like an insane amount of money. And you say it exactly too. Like you look at the Ricketts, like we're not talking about the money Brickhouse Tavern's making, probably not as much as they have in years past, but like, I mean, they charge people to come in and watch movies on their stupid park all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, what about that money? What about the money they take in from, you know, like, it's just, we could get super pissed off if we wanted to very easily about this. Right. But
I guess the
fact is, go ahead.
I was gonna say, the best way to boil it down is if you're somebody who stands up for ownership in the aspect of the relationship between ownership and players is that ownership is there to take the risk in buying and owning the team. If you are also going to say that the owners can, when they're having a bad year, just call the players to the table and say, take less money. What are the owners good for then? If they're not taking the risk, if they want the players to share the risk, the financial risk, why do you even need them? Why, you know, like we're at a point where, you know, it's a little bit hyperbole, but if the players just all got together and said, we're going to form our own league with our own teams and we'll rent out the ballparks from you and we'll sign a contract with, you know, TV deals and all that, and we just won't have owners, I feel like that's a healthy idea that is, you know, every bit as viable as the current situation. The owners have really they're not necessary at all if they're not willing to take the financial burden. That's mm-hmm. just my two cents on it.
I mean, I'm game. let's buy a baseball team, Ryan.
Yeah, sure. And if I lose $1.2 billion, well, I never had it in the first place.
Well, yeah. That doesn't matter too, but that's a whole nother conversation. But thanks for sticking around, guys. I guess this was a long way of saying we're not quite sure what's happening, but these are some names we think you should pay attention to going into this offseason whenever it really starts. Like Ryan said, the baseball season ends the moment the World Series does, and we're getting pretty close to that, which has been fun too. I'm excited for that. Pulling for the Rays, but I wouldn't be upset if the Dodgers win. But we'll have to reconvene another time here once we have a clearer idea of what this offseason could look like, and maybe then we can share some opinions. But right now, we're just guessing. That's what everyone's doing. So, but We appreciate you guys sticking around. Keep an eye out for more episodes later this week. You know where to find us. Subscribe on whatever podcast app you use. Google, Apple, Spotify, TuneIn app. Make sure you leave 5-star review. But with that, you guys enjoy the rest of your day. And as always, go Cubbies.